Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
The Match Ball.
Welcome to the show. It's brought to you with Levi Solicitors. They will do you a 10% discount on your legal fees at levisolicitors.co.uk/thesquareball. Dan, Michael and Mosco here with you post Fulham. Gentlemen, have we just witnessed the end of the Jesse Marsh era?
Let's fucking hope so.
Are you that definitive about it?
Yeah. I mean, does anyone in this room, in the stadium, think he has a future at Leeds?
I don't think he does. That's my main takeaway from the end of it is, I think whatever we feel about it, whatever he tells Five Live, whatever the board want to do, he looks very beaten. He's not got, and considering, you know, he's all body language and fist pumping, and when we were losing to Man City in last season and all that kind of stuff, all that seems to have gone out the last two games. And if he doesn't look like he believes in it, I don't know how I can believe in it. So that's probably the time to just kind of put an end to it.
When their third goal went in, he was on the halfway line with Joffe, he was about to come on, and he did a little kick of a bib that was on the floor, and it was just so pathetic. He just sort of, it was like, it was not even proper frustration. It was like there it goes.
Yeah, there was a bit caught on the cameras where he kind of turned the bench. Once you're at that, I mean, I don't know what else he would do in that situation when you're about to win the game by bringing Joffe on for 8 minutes, but then that happens just before you're about to do it. I don't know what other body languages available to you, but he does seem, the last two games, he seems to just be taking it out of all of our hands with six changes and then the defeats and then him just looking like a shadow of the man who turned up here. Like, well, I hope you enjoyed your time in Leeds.
He did. He looked cheap, didn't he? And it's worth saying as well, for the benefit of anybody who wasn't in the stadium, that he did a lap of the pitch at the end, because obviously at Leicester, people were singing, "Where the fuck is Jesse Marsh?" So I think he thought it important to face the crowd, and he did, and he was, again, we were talking about body language, he was doing the low applause.
Yeah, it didn't go brilliantly for him, did it?
And he
got quite a lot of boos.
He got near to the cop and there was a football there and he booted it out towards off the pitch towards the West Stand with a big frustrated meaningful.
That was a bit like the bib kick as well. It wasn't like a hard kick really, was it? It was just like this thing can fuck up as well.
Yeah, which is, again, but for somebody who is very, you know, when you're trying to look at it from his point of view, he's very aware of body language and messages and what things look like. And, you know, he's got to be sending the right messages at the right time. And the last two games, all the messages I feel like I've been getting from him are just like, help me, send me home, let me out of this, because I've lost the thread of what I'm supposed to be doing.
We've been asked, by the way, in the comments on YouTube, because this is streamed YouTube live on YouTube for our TSB Plus members. Thank you very much. People are asking, did we all wear black in preparation for this, or is it a coincidence?
Well, Moscow is in navy blue.
I was going to say, Moscow's in navy blue.
Yeah, I think the shirt is navy blue as well, but it's been raining, so everything's turned black anyway.
So I think there's a bit of that.
Like my heart.
A bit of it is true.
I wore a bit else's shirt, just to remind myself of a better time.
I mean, a lot of our merch is dark coloured, because it's,
because we cater to fat middle-aged men, like us.
I felt like wearing black today. It felt like going into a funeral. The atmosphere was really flat and tense going into it. I had a feeling there was going to be good backing from the crowd going into that game, but it would always be sat on a knife edge.
It
didn't really turn properly, did it?
No, it didn't. I actually expected it to be a lot more vociferous when, particularly when the third went in. But actually, I think people were just sad.
Yeah, there was an air of sort of grim resignation, I think is probably the fairest way to describe it.
It didn't really kick off, did it?
The South Stand did join in with Sacked in the Morning.
Yeah, the cop did
quite
a lot. Did as well,
and I think then, because I think there's an awareness that you shouldn't really be singing that about your own manager. It's not the done thing. And it seemed like that message kind of went through. It was, the steam was let off. And then there was kind of the question of like, well, we probably shouldn't sing that, should we? So what are we going to sing? How about nothing? And it just turned into that for a while. I just went, well, nothing. And then there was a bit kicking off, not kicking off, but obviously people were just knew where Fradrid Sani and Kinnear and Orta and Pete Lowy were all sitting. So they knew where to turn and shout and mutter. And
what was it like gesture. Over there? Because you're on that side.
Same, like not really. It wasn't like a Brentford where people were trying to last season. Wasn't it where people were trying to get to them, or Brighton was ugly Brighton, as well. Yeah, yeah. But just everyone knew they're there, and everybody's kind of when stuff's happening, kind of looking over and going, "Well, have they fucked off yet?"
Angus has had a bad day, hasn't he? Because Luton got pumped by Watford earlier on in the big game.
Good. If I can't enjoy myself, I don't want him to either. There was a chant of sat the board as well.
Yeah, there was. There was never really huge enthusiasm behind any of it. There was, like you say, it flattened when people realised what was happening.
Well, it's Sunday afternoon.
Yeah,
it's 2 o'clock.
Been pissing it down.
Raining. It's Fulham. There was a bit before the last. Like to talk about the game a little bit. The last 10 minutes before half time, when Sinisterra went down, and then Mitrovic went down, and then someone else went down. And then there was a moment when their keeper hoofed a big clearance, and then Cooper got a really good, strong header on it and sent it back. And then Fulham banged it up the other end of the pitch towards Mitrovic. And I was like, I am back in the Championship, watching us just trading balls over halfway line with Fulham and Mitrovic. And that 10 minutes just felt boring at that point. It was I was just bored by what's happening. And then the second half was a bit, we had some moments. But the second goal, there's a lot wrong with the second goal that I think probably is maybe that might be the moment when I feel like there was no coming back from that one.
Yeah, I think there's no way back. When for me it was like a perfect example of it just being fragile. We had moments, like you say, we had some moments, but it all just felt fragile. Is the only word I can sort of think of, that it could turn just very, very quickly, and confidence would shatter, and nothing would work.
What happened on the second goal that makes me feel it was significant was there was the corner and we cleared it, and then the ball's played back out to the side where the corner was taken, and there was three Leeds players. I can only remember Stroke as one. I can't remember the other two. I think Martin Rocker might have been out there. I can't remember. Harrison maybe as well. But three Leeds players sort of going out there, and none of them could decide which one should go to the player with the ball, and they were just standing looking at each other going, which one of us is supposed to do this?
Shouldn't it be all of them?
Well, and then there was a cross came in, and those three players are completely out of the game, which meant it was Bobby Decodova Reed.
It was.
Was unmarked to head, because while they were trying to decide who should press the player on the ball, nobody has decided who should mark this player that is also available. So there was, and it just felt like
broken down, didn't it?
Well,
it
just, a well coached team knows what it's doing in those situations.
There was another example as well. You know, in Sam Greenwood, just before he got taken off, he picked up the ball in the deep line midfield position. I think one of their attacks broke down or whatever. And I think we might have been losing by this point. Can't quite remember. And Click was stood out over by the East Stand. And the obvious ball was to Click. And he tried to loft it over, but that then gave the Fulham player enough time to kind of get back and intercept it or challenge Click. And you think it needs to be kind of drilled on the floor quickly to him if you're going to move it like that. And I think that was probably a perfect encapsulation of when the confidence just drops and they start to second guess themselves and they don't quite think fast enough, and maybe the tactical instruction just isn't there. It's what you're talking about there, Moscow. The words that I kind of picked up on is it's about a well-coached team, well, isn't it?
Thinking back to when we played Scotty Parker's Fulham and he said we were predictable patterns of play or whatever, and I'm thinking, what I wouldn't give for a pattern of play, because there's just nothing.
No, it's shapeless a lot of the time, isn't it?
It looks like they've just been sent out to have a kick around. I can't see any attacking structure at all. And defensively, we're just shit. Like, the set pieces were a massive problem today. But, I mean, there was the early chance they had as well. I think it was Harrison Reed, who I know scored against Villa, didn't he? But he very rarely scores. So it was probably good that it fell to him. But, like, just that diagonal ball in behind fullback guesses every single time. And then, also in the first half, we had a corner, and then 5 seconds later, they were through on goal. And it's like, how the fuck has this happened?
Yeah.
Like, we're just bad, basically. Mm. We're bad at defending.
We're not organised,
and we are bad at attacking.
And what's kind of strange about that is, until the last week, and apart from Brentford, I would call us better defensively than we had been. It felt like we were obviously always at risk to a counter, but teams weren't capitalising. And set pieces had become less of an issue. There wasn't that fear of us conceding every single time. But then, for some reason, it is sort of in the last week. And since the international break, when we had, and obviously the games called off, when there was time to practice these things, we seem to have got worse. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of the story of the Chelsea game as well, where we hit that height and you think, oh, well, actually, this could all turn out very well, 3-0 against a Champions League team.
Felt like the vibes carried us through on that day, didn't it? You know, like we're just the kind of like riding the crest of that momentum wave when we got in front and the crowd was all behind it.
But that has to start from somewhere. And we did play well. It wasn't, I do know what you mean about the positivity really helped. And Brendan, the way Brendan Aaronson scored that goal to sort of start it really gave the thing a lift and put us in the mood to do it. But we were, apart from that, the games either, what were the results at the start of the season? We weren't getting smashed.
We beat Wolves, didn't we? And then beat Chelsea. And
yeah.
And eight points from the first five games, Moscow.
Makes us safe.
And it should have been more. We should have beaten Southampton.
Yeah.
Should have made us safe, but where are we in the league?
Well, 19th. 96% of teams stay up. If there's a 4% that we can find, we will find it.
Well, we still might.
And this is the argument for making the change, isn't it? Like, I just feel sad about it all, really. It's sadly that it's just unraveled.
It just seems pointless and incompetent and just infuriating that we seem to have got back to this point when it would be, you know, it's wishful thinking, but wouldn't it be nice if we were just good?
Yeah.
Like, whatever your opinions are about the style of play and Marsh as a manager and anything else and the board and whatever, wouldn't it just be so much easier if we just went well and rolled and we were good and we won? Even every week, just like sometimes and like and enough to not be in this situation after 11 games where the only conclusion is the coach getting sacked and then we just start the whole fucking thing again.
I think today it looked like pretty much everyone has lost belief in it. It looked like the players have, the crowd have. When Fulham scored, it was like, oh, well, no surprise.
Yeah.
Fine. And I noticed after the second Fulham goal, which was, there was still 20 minutes left, wasn't there, about at that point? Yeah. There was absolutely zero reaction on the restart. Like, the crowd couldn't even be bothered to kind of go,
oh, come on, Leeds.
Yeah. Come on, we've still got time. We can get back into this. Everyone just went.
You saw it in the players. There was that kind of trying to stir the air.
Everyone sort of went,
here we are again.
Singing Sack the Board. That was the main preoccupation.
It's sort of over with. There was one little bit at the start of the second half where I think it was triggered by Ayling having brought it down his chest and had a shot. Mm. And for 5 minutes after that, the crowd got going. But it didn't really lead to anything. And the changes again, just... I mean, Somerville, I thought it did all right. Actually,
scored?
When he came on, yeah.
Gelhart put him through, almost.
I was convinced that was going to be ruled out by VAR. You know, when the ref just stopped.
They were looking for offside.
They checked, yeah. And I just thought, what a perfect... If this is to be the end of Marsh, what a perfect encapsulation of his era of having a goal ruled out for offside right at the end.
Gelhart got his usual 6 minutes or whatever time
did
he deserves. He got this.
Well, he set up that goal. So it's almost like...
I sort of zoned out by that point.
Could have brought him on.
I actually missed the Mitrovic goal. My phone buzzed in my pocket just as he put that in. So I glanced down at my pocket. And
was Melier at fault for that as well?
Yeah, but it should never have got to that. I'd like to see it from the start because I shouldn't talk about only having seen out the corner of my eye. I'm trying to work out who had Mitrovic first. By the time it's in, Ayling is chasing after him at the front post and it should never have got to that. And then he glances his header and Melier gets a hand to it and you'd want Melier to stop it. But that header should never have been allowed to happen. And I had a feeling, I think, because Stroke was marking Mitrovic on every other corner and I need to see a replay from the very start to see whether he ran off Stroke, because I can see on some of the replays Stroke kind of appearing like, oh shit. And I don't know whether it's because he's just seen the danger and he's trying to get there, or because he'd lost Mitrovic way back and he was trying to catch up. But, you know, mark Mitrovic.
Yep.
Don't let him head it at the near post, and then whether your goalkeeper stops it or not becomes a moot point. But he was getting away a few times too easily, and we didn't deal with him very well at all. We did in open play, although we had some chances, but Mitrovic from corners is something that... Got to keep an eye on that, lads.
A really big man who's got it heading a ball.
Yeah.
Jamie's in the comments on YouTube saying he's never seen me looking so defeated. I'm not particularly defeated. I'm just fed up of it being shit. That's all. I just, like, as Moscow said, it boils down to nothing more simple than I just want to watch Leeds being good and it's not at the minute.
And I can't see it improving is the real problem.
I think that's, you know, when Phil said on the show on Friday, like, he didn't think there was a way back for Marsh from this. I was slightly surprised at that. But then I got in there today and you saw how the team responded to that equalising goal and just watched that confidence evaporate. And I see what he means. It is hard when you mix in the dropping confidence of the players and the crowd just turning that. It's all just sort of disintegrating.
In some ways, I suppose in that regard, I feel like in some ways a defeat is actually better than a draw today, because at least it probably puts an end to it.
Rips the plaster off the wound.
There is some real tactical clarity there.
The comments are coming in, by the way, from the press conference. Have you seen these coming in?
Just before on that, on the, is there any way back? And then we'll see what he's saying. Leicester are interesting because we went there on Thursday and most of the coverage after the match as well was like, if Brendan Rodgers had lost this, that would be it for him. Sacked, that's the end of it. He's put all the pressure now on Jesse Marsh. And then Leicester go today and they won 4-0. And so when on the one hand, I could see what Phil meant about there is no way back for Jesse Marsh after Thursday. But if we had gone out against Fulham today, smashed them 4-0, big response, everybody's back on it, and the six changes all worked and every player that he put on was amazing, and then Elland Road was bouncing at the end, and then we go into the Liverpool game and we do what Forest did to them and we beat them as well, back, and then we'd probably just end up back here again in 6 weeks.
It's fine margins in football, isn't it? I think that the point that Phil made, which is what you just said about being back here in 6 weeks, is that confidence in Marsh and his plan has got to a point where it's just wafer thin, isn't it? Then everyone can see that maybe the Red Bull stuff. For me personally, I watch it and I'm like you, I don't particularly like how it
plays out, but if
it works and we win, then you tolerate anything. But
and the other thing with Brendan Rodgers, it'll be interesting to see, okay, so they're beating Wolves 4-0, you know, are they going to give him, does he get a new contract now and then they're all brilliant and shiny happy for the rest of the season, or do they just start losing games and then they sack him later as well? It's that's where I suppose there is a way back, because there is always a way back, because if you just take the team up into mid-table,
win games,
and then you're all right, and you win the games.
We were 14th for about 4 minutes today.
But if we had if we had won 4-0 today, there still would have been that feeling of like, is this a bit of an illusion? And you wouldn't have had the answer either way against Liverpool, because you just go, oh, well, it's Liverpool. And then there's only a couple of games left before December. I think that's what Angus Kinnear was trying to say without saying anything in his programme notes.
What, he's gone until the World Cup?
Yeah, let's just hope it gets better before the World Cup, and then maybe we won't have to do anything, and let's hope some of your criticism is justified next time. Anyway, what's Marsh saying?
No, he's just sort of saying we keep finding ways to lose games. Every game's in the balance.
Sorry. I thought for a moment you were like, this is his way out of it. It's like, no, we're going to keep finding ways to lose games.
Well, the start of that comment that I didn't actually say that is that Fulham are finding ways to win. We're finding ways to lose. Every game's in the balance. And he's taking responsibility for it as well, which is, you know, fair play to him for that. And on the question of no striker being brought in the summer, I'm not going to start playing hindsight or throwing anyone under the bus. I'm looking at myself, which is fair enough.
Yeah. I mean, he's got players apart from Rodrigo, and I know Rodrigo scored, but he's headed it into an open goal while Fulham's defender just looks at his stomach. It is weird. He just kind of turns around. It's like he's transfixed by Rodrigo. It's like, wow, look at it. Oh, it's Rodrigo.
Luscious bouncing hair.
He played for Valencia, and then he heads it in. But then the next thing Rodrigo did was try to play a ball down the line for Sinisterra. He just booted it out in the south stand.
And there was that moment when he got in behind as well, behind the fullback, and he just needed to put it across, and he just fucked it. Yeah.
But it's, you know, was supposed to be, I felt like, you know, I was defending the underuse of Gelhardt last season, because like, oh, he's got to feel his way into the Premier League, but by the end of it, right, he's had that season of feeling his way into the Premier League, and everybody's saying, the board is saying we don't need to sign a striker because we've got Gelhardt. I agree with that. So fucking play the little bastard.
I think it doesn't make any sense, does it? If he's not being kept out of the team by people in good form.
No.
Both Rodrigo and Bamford are playing terribly, if we're being honest about it. Because, I mean, Bamford came on, I thought he was shit today with Bamford. I didn't think he did anything. He came on and missed a decent chance as well. Again,
a good save.
Trying to hit with his left foot again, though.
Yeah, he needed lifting, didn't it, that one? Did it?
Just
lifting.
Use your right foot, Pat.
I think it was too close. I watched the replay quite slowly because I wanted to know, was it a miss or was it a save? And it looked like a good save. I think his touch is good and puts it where he wants it onto his foot, and then it's close to being under Leno. It's a good save, I think. Apart from that, there was one great cross from Ayling, which seems to be one of the things he brought, was pinging in crosses like the old days.
I was going to say, I went, well, hey, a cross at that point. I remember it fondly, that one.
Bamford watched it and was like, oh, probably should have been in there. But it feels like we're using Gelhardt where we should be using Perkins. Like, if a player is scoring, an 18-year-old is scoring goal after goal, or even Matteo Joseph is scoring goal after goal in the under-21s, that's the player who you're sticking on for 10 minutes at the end. Gelhardt is being constantly put into this situation where he's being asked to save the day, which is too much responsibility because of the stage he's at. It's not just like, oh, let's see if this kid can do something. Last season was, let's see if this kid can do something. He answered a lot of questions then and talked himself into being, or played himself into being, used more this season. Time, it should progress, and he's progressed, and he should be at the point where he gets more than that. And then somebody else behind him, who we have these kids in the under-21s who were worth 5 minutes at the end, maybe not today. But, and the other thing with Gelhardt is he comes on and he sets up a goal.
Yeah. So, just to answer one thing about Kevin in the comments, is asking about Sinisterra being taken off. Why is he always taken off? He was carrying an injury in that second half.
I mean, when he got injured at the first half, he indicated to come off straight away. He went down after about
I think he was saying he needed attention. Like, this, something isn't right here.
I thought he was giving it that I'm injured and need to go off.
Well, I think he did the. I think he did that
as he went down.
I saw him wave because he did that kind of Strauch style tackle that broke Harvey Elliott's leg, didn't he, and scooped the ball out. And he injured himself in that, and you could see he was quite heavy-legged after that, and he wasn't moving and linking up as well as you might want him to. And then I think he went into another thing just after that, and that's when he signaled to the what's that
sack
thing called?
Him.
Dugout.
Sack him.
Signaled to the dugout, just saying, like, I need attention. Then the physio came on, but even going into half-time, the last 5 minutes before half-time, he was sort of limping around. Then when he came back off, he didn't seem as mobile as he was in that first half, because he was causing them problems.
Mm.
Yeah, but Somerville. I didn't think he was right. Did Bamford injure himself again as well?
He did look like it at the end.
It looked like he'd done his Achilles, or maybe his calf.
Let's start from like mildly twisted ankle and leave the Achilles
severed. It's fully, it's absolutely detached.
But yeah, he'd gone for a cross at the near post, and he got up, and he was giving a bit of a hop and a jump and a skip, and I didn't like the look of it.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
I mean, I don't know enough about football to answer this question definitively, but my big fear about Marsh is that he's all vibes and not enough about tactics. And he's got the Red Bull manual, and when it doesn't work, it terrifies me.
I mean, one of the concerns I had about him at the start was that it sounds like he has essentially copied everything Ralf Rangnick told him. He's going, all right, I'll do all that. But he's not Ralf Rangnick. So when something needs adapting, he just has to go, oh, I'll do a Jesse Marsh bit on this now. And that's not...
Is that reflected in the team changes and the subs and stuff like that, do you think? Because I think everybody, to a man and a woman, looked at the team changes and went, oh, that feels like a bit of a Hail Mary.
Greenwood did,
yeah,
in particular.
Why doesn't Click play?
Yeah,
and in that situation. Thought. Greenwood was fine today. Good bits, bad bits. But it's strange that Click doesn't get the nod in that situation, if Adams is out.
Well, what vexed me, and it goes back to what I was saying about Greenwood before, and it's the same for all the midfielders, even Rocker. Rocker's got a little bit of quality about him. He can kind of pick a pass and thread a ball through people. a lot of them so many times don't seem to have any options on.
No.
When we pick up the ball and you think, well, what are you going to do now? And they'll tippy-tap it around at the back to try and draw the centre forward on and then play around the centre forward. And that's when it tends to open up a little bit. So that might be part of the tactics. I don't really know. But it's quite frustrating to watch, isn't it? The 100 to 70 stuff.
I was looking at my note. I knew I'd written it down somewhere in my notes. 30 minutes I put, we're shit, no movement, no width. Yeah. And it was exactly that situation you're describing where you see a player with the ball and you think, well, what's he meant to do with it? Like, it feels like no one wants it.
Yeah.
And if they get it, they don't know what the next pass is going to be. Whereas good teams know exactly. You give it to me, you go there, there's movement on the outside. You know, the work on actual moves, it just doesn't look like we do any of it. I don't know what we do in training. Because it doesn't
rondos.
Well, is that it?
Yeah. Just rondos are good.
And I don't know if the defensive training
rondos
all revolves around us attacking in a narrow way against a narrow defence, so it's fine. But then the defence gets into an actual game and they're like, oh shit, these players are standing out on the wings. I don't know what we're doing.
Can't we just do a rondo?
James is in the comments just saying, it says, okay guys, gegenpressing has existed before Red Bull. Klopp did it at Dortmund and played narrow. Played pretty narrow to start with, though, when he was at Liverpool. But he changed because the Premier League demanded it.
Yeah, and he got better players as well, didn't he? I think the overhaul of the team. And yeah, it did exist before Red Bull, but the particular Red Bull flavour, I mean, I don't think it's controversial to position Jesse Marsh, who described himself as a company man, within the context of the organisation that he worked for 8 years. He was at New York, then assistant at Leipzig, then coach at Salzburg, then coach at Leipzig, where he got sacked. Well, left, didn't he? Didn't go well. And then this is his first, since he had his job at Montreal, where he said he tried to just be Bob Bradley and was terrible. And then he went around the world for a year and came back and then met Gerard Houllier, Ralph Rangnick, and learned all that stuff. That's who he learned it from. He didn't learn it from Dortmund. He learned it in-house from the Red Bull crew. So what was interesting as well today was that Franz Schiemer, who was his assistant last season and his assistant at Red Bull, was there. He changed his job after last season to being a Salzburg-based consultant because he decided he didn't want to, I mean, it's the perfect lifestyle, really, live in Salzburg and just watch Leeds games and sending him tapes of training, I think, was part of it. He could just be on Zoom going like, Jesse,
more rondos.
But he was there in the press area with the analysts. And I don't know if he's been at recent games or if it's kind of a, Franz, help. I need you here, not in Salzburg.
I know you told me off. You told me off, didn't you, about wanting better players, Moscow, but that might, your declaration earlier that you just want Leeds to be good and my declaration, I want better players. I think we're singing from the same hymn sheet, basically. And Joe's in the comments on YouTube saying second season in a row that the board have ignored clear squad deficiencies. And it's so true.
Do you want a tweet about the board from Adam Pope?
I'd love one.
Jesse Marsh says he's spoken to the board tonight and they're backing him.
Right.
That's good, isn't it?
More good judgment. I think it's, I just find that it's just a bit of a frustrating dead end of a conversation because every team would be better if it signed better players. And then, so it always just feels like I don't know where to go after that because it's just a truism.
Right.
But then, and also I feel like the choices they've made shouldn't put us back this far that, you know, Rodrigo and Bamford should be able to do whatever we need up front. One's a £30 million Spanish international. The other one's played for England and scored 17 goals in the Premier League. So it's not a big leap to think they should do it again. And then Firpo should be better than he is. And then I was thinking about that more during the week and the whole kind of thing, because I keep coming up with these like theories of like, no, the rational explanation for this is like, maybe because we're being linked with that left back who's at Philadelphia Union, who'll be available in January.
Kai Wagner.
Yeah, so maybe like that's why they've held on so we can get a better player if we just wait a couple of months. So I come up with these rationalizations that think like, oh, so that's okay. But then I think, am I actually thinking about this more than they are? And that actually they are just like fucking up constantly and I'm seeing things in it where it's like, oh no, there's actually some sound good sense there. And they're just like, oh, fucking hell, he's... Apparently we're doing a great job, and like whether I'm thinking them into doing good things, whereas actually they are just incompetent idiots who wouldn't know a good left back and couldn't find one if he was in their garden.
Well, I think that conversation extends just into Victor Orta, really, in particular, and because Marsh is his man, as we understand it.
It's his man playing his players.
Yeah, so, I was going to say there's a lot of his players in there.
And so he's got to take, carry the can just as much as Marshall.
This is not about the players being Spanish, but a lot of the Spanish players that he's signed are, I think, not necessarily money well spent, shall we say, for the return that we're getting from some of them. And it's not just them.
Neither are any of these.
No.
He's done, it's for probably a full podcast of its own. He's done some good things as Arthur.
Yeah, definitely. But the youth setup has improved a lot. Yeah. And the young players he's brought in, fantastic.
But the headline signings and the managerial appointments, Bielsa, the obvious exception, have been disastrous.
I was going to say, Bielsa in many ways is the ultimate expression of what a hipster would like in charge of their football club. And Arthur always strikes me as a bit of a football hipster, you know, in terms of the way that he wants someone like Thomas Christiansen, who's inexperienced, to develop alongside the team. And I think they were tapping into a similar sort of thing with Jesse Marsh, is that he's got something to prove, rather than, like Bielsa, for example, had nothing to prove in order to get the job. And, you know, some of the other candidates they might have thought of for the job who could maybe just go, well, I don't need this, and walk away.
Well, it's experience as well. Did you tell me this, that they want a coach that they can grow with, so they deliberately turned away from more experience?
Yeah, someone like Valverde, for example, would have been similar to Bielsa in that he didn't really need the job, didn't really need to be here. They wanted somebody like Marsh, who had something to prove, who has had an upward trajectory, but has taken a bit of a lull.
And the idea is that they have room to grow and they will develop alongside the club. But the problem is, if you get a coach at that stage of their career, they are necessarily imperfect. Otherwise, there would not be room to grow and improve and learn. And that is not necessarily compatible with the first 11 games of a Premier League season, because that's the point at which they're learning. And this is, you can talk about Jesse Marsh right now. Maybe if he did this for 3 years, at the end of it, he would be a perfect, brilliant, experienced Premier League coach who can make the right tactical decisions before a match, and all these substitutions are really effective and everybody's really well coached. But without that 3 years to develop and grow and improve, he won't get to that stage.
I'm going to say he will not be a Premier League coach if we keep him.
And by the time we get to that time passes, we'll be relegated, because all his mistakes happen now while he's got to develop. So it's a great...
And there isn't room to make those mistakes, quite frankly, with the Premier League. No, with 20 teams in it, and 14 of them are scrambling stay up.
So you either go for an relatively inexperienced coach, and let's, you know, be fair to... Where's Marsh been before? He had half a season in the Bundesliga. He was there before as an assistant coach, but this is the first time he's coaching outside of MLS and Austria. And if you're going to go with that and you're going to decide, right, this is going to be the guy for the long term and he will have to improve quickly, then you can't make any decisions on him in the first 11 games, because obviously he's going to make loads of mistakes in the first 11 games because he doesn't know what the fuck he's doing yet. And so it's by choice. You are choosing a manager to be in charge at the time of their career when they are most likely to make loads of mistakes.
But there's an arrogance that baked into that. That's what I think is the point I was getting at with regards to Arthur. They think that we can wing it and have these projects. Like it's been pointed out by Chris, who's LUFC Texas, here in the comments, upward trajectory followed by a lull. Sounds like Firpo at Barcelona. Exactly. These are the type of players that they've been trying to sign. The little projects, the fixer-uppers, and it's not being good enough, quite frankly. And, you know, you repeatedly make these points.
A managerial equivalent of Junior Firpo is the last thing any club in the world needs.
No, exactly. We don't need the fixer-uppers. Sometimes, we always speak with hindsight as well, which is one of the, you know, the big things about this.
One of the big benefits.
Yeah, it is. But think of, like, going back to when we were trying to recruit a left-back and we were all saying, get a fucking left-back. Just get, you know, if you can get Matt Target from Villa or whatever, go do that. Because he was about the same price as Junior Firpo. Now, we don't know what the relative wages are, so there's always that to factor in.
Didn't we give Firpo a pay rise?
Probably. But he was on quite low wages at Barcelona, if the leaked salaries there are true. He was on like under 20 grand a week or something like that. It was very, very low relative to Premier League money. So that might be a factor. But even just go do the obvious thing sometimes. Just do the solid, obvious thing. But we could go around the houses on this forever and ever and ever.
I mean, one of the other things that sort of comes down to as well was a lot of the talk last season with the board, and kind of some of the things Kinnear said is about Marcelo Bielsa having too much control and that they've given too much of the club over to him.
Fucking hell, he was saving them from a lot, is what he was doing. He masked their shortcomings.
Exactly. So, I mean, we've seen the club both before Bielsa and after Bielsa, with the ball in control. And I think I liked the bit when Bielsa had too much control a little bit more. Even the last season, and then we can talk, well, it's all getting into tangents now, but there's a lot of last season happened after they'd started talking to Jesse Marsh, didn't it? So what was the direction of thought from the board and the coach? And that's the thing as well with Marsh, is that this isn't just, it wasn't, he didn't just turn up last spring. They've been talking to him for, how long was lockdown before that? More than a year. Deciding, right, no, this is going to be the guy, we're going to bring him in, it's going to, he will, even if it hadn't been when it was going to be this summer. So that's why I keep
I was just going to say that, Moscow. Yeah, Matt, that was a thought running through my mind. Take Bielsa out of this situation. They were always going to put Marsh in the summer.
And they were always going to sign these players, because we knew Brendan Aaronson was slated, and or at least they were always going to sign players that would suit him, because they have. That was this. What we are seeing now was the plan that they were working towards, regardless of what Marcelo Bielsa was doing at all. He was almost irrelevant to it all. There was just this other thing going on that, like, this is how we'll take the club forward. And we don't look like we're going forward at all. It would be so much easier if we did. If we just
scored twice, so we must be going forwards in some respects. Hey, God.
Yeah, I mean, did we start all right? There were bits that we were okay. Well, in fact, we started on top.
We did, yeah.
It took ages for Fulham to sort of lay.
But it crumbles so easily.
And it just teams can have chances without doing anything against us. That's the thing, that that for us to create a chance, it feels like we have to have 15 minutes of sustained pressure, and then eventually out of that comes a chance. It feels like opposition teams just occasionally twat one over the top and they throw on goal. And it's like, it's just so easy to play against us.
Part of me does wonder. I mean, we've talked about there the difference in short term and long term. Part of me is like, I'd kind of like Marsh to limp to the World Cup and then give him that time to sort it out, and then see if maybe after 20-30 games he is the answer and this is all great.
Do you know, even,
I'd love to believe in it.
Even if we limp to the World Cup, I'm not convinced he survives. I'm really not.
Not convinced he survives tomorrow.
I think there's probably a sense in the club that the crowd are just not buying it, and I'm not convinced tactically. And you have to imagine that, given how kind of reactionary Radrizzani was with Bielsa, like losing his shit with the 3-3 at Villa, that similar feelings have probably descended on the boardroom. Just on
maybe
the boardroom,
we'll
by the way.
Maybe we'll just wait until after the next transfer window and then
do it.
Sack somebody and bring somebody else in who can't have any more of their own players.
We know that Pete Lowe has been here today. And Jarminiches, who's in the comments on YouTube, saying the 49ers need to pull the finger out and buyers or jog on. The limbo at the top doesn't help. I agree with that completely. I think Radrizzani has probably stayed too long. I think they tried to rebuild in this summer. It's still not been enough by the looks of it. Or maybe it has been. We might find out if he does go and they replace him with somebody else that we have got enough.
It is all Marsh's fault.
But on the evidence so far, it doesn't feel like it, does it?
It's weird because I think the signings of this summer, I'm sort of all right with all of them. I don't think any of them are terrible. I know Christensen's
it's the left back situation, the failure to get forward, isn't it?
That's not the only reason we're losing games.
Though, no, it's not, these are the glaring holes in the squad. I mean, I do have tactical doubts, yes.
Pascal Struyck is playing all right at left back. Like, we've got a decent left back. The only downside is it's Pascal Struyck. And then up front, I think there's more to it than just those. But Michael was about to praise all that new signing. Well, correctly.
But no, I don't think any of them are individually bad players. But I just think playing in this way, it's just not working.
It's funny, even though Brendan Aaronson is very much of the Red Bull school, I think it's sort of wasting him a little bit at times. Because he's dead good at turning on the ball and getting his body in front of people. He's still lightweight and needs to bulk up and stuff, which I think will happen in time with the Premier League, and he'll become a smart footballer. As you say, maybe he needs three seasons in order to develop Moscow. But I think he's not best deployed in the stuff that he's doing, this kind of pick it up and just drive for the box relentlessly. Sometimes they need to be a bit smart and give each other options.
Well, the thing is as well, in a different system, picking him and driving for the box probably becomes easier if you've got with, because it splits the defence more and he's just not running into such a wall every time, which is how it feels.
Create more room to play. I mean, it was the through ball from Aaronson that set up Bamford for that one-on-one was beautiful, and was also like a really good example of kind of the instinctive Red Bull school of, like, he's in the sort of 10 position, weighs a beautiful little ball into the striker, right into the middle of loads and loads of players, and the keeper's rushing out. And then it creates these, it's weird because it, as a style, it seems geared towards making bad players play better collectively because they don't have to be so precise. It's all about kind of get it, it's a bit mixer-ish, where it's like, if we just aim for the penalty spot and then somebody will be there and we'll pounce and we'll score. So it's not, you don't have to worry about whether your midfield can artfully create and carve out an opportunity. You can just, you know, if they're a bunch of cloven-hoofed idiots, then they can just bang the ball forward. So it kind of creates this, because it grew out of the school of football development. So you've got this unevenness in the teams like Salzburg, where they've got some really good players like an Erling Haaland, who they know is going to be a superstar. And they've got some other players who are just like Austrian league players who are never going to really do much. So they have to find this way of getting them all to play together. And that's how they do it. And it, but it seems to create much more difficulty for a player like Bamford in the box, who needs, he just doesn't seem to be able to finish those little chances that this creates. And then it also, when you take a player like Brendan Aaronson and Luis Sinisterra and even, but Jackie Harrison, three really good attackers who seem to have brains and ideas and stuff that they can do with the football that is creative and fun and cool. But they have to stop doing all that to do this kind of stuff that's geared the to lesser stuff. Players. Yeah, and it does feel like there's a lot of quality there that is being...
It's been overlooked, isn't it? It's been suppressed.
Down on, suppressed by what they're being asked to do.
And it's not like we're doing that because we're being dour and defensive, because we're not defensive. Like, if you had... And I know some of the names that have been people are now talking about as our next manager, potentially, at the more Brexity end of it, you've got Deitch, but then you've got like Rafa Benitez being linked to something. And some of his teams have actually been really pretty awful to watch, but they sort of are good defensively. They're good at what they're aiming to do. Whereas this, I've got in front of me the replay of the Bobby Dick or Dover
Regal.
Fucking hell. He's got like 10 yards either side of him and a full goal in front of him.
Exactly, and you'll see the three players trying to decide which one of us is supposed to go out and block this cross from coming in.
And in trying to put in this natural successor, I'm doing air quotes, for Bielsa, which is nothing of the sort whatsoever, they have tried to run before they can walk. And it's also the same, I think, with a lot of the signings as well, going for like Cody Gakpo and players like that. Just lower your sights a little bit and do the basic shit for a bit, get us solidified in the division and then start to build up to that next level. But it's the shoot for the moon stuff again.
There's
fucking sort it out,
idiots. I was about to say that. It feels at times like with the whole building from Bielsa and kind of the Leeds sort of DNA style that they want to put in, where it's all aggressive and fitness and like winning the ball and tackling and they love, isn't it grit the word that they keep using? I can never remember. But there's been like a big misunderstanding, because like Eddie Gray's there today, and like Eddie Gray did not, like, he's probably a considerably harder man than most because of the era that he played football in. But you don't associate him with, you know, bloodthirsty tackles and, you know, headbutting people and knocking out Franny Lee. We had players who did that, but we also had players who were skillful and played expansive football and dribbled. And for all the times that we do, like, we'll replay Norman Hunter knocking Franny Lee out, but we'll also replay, you know, Eddie Gray dribbling around six players at Burnley. And kind of this idea that what gets Elland Road pumping is a big crunching tackle, but it's also true that that's not the only thing that gets Elland Road pumping. We do actually quite like Luke Ayling's volley against Huddersfield. That's probably one of the last times when we had a crowd in, when there was like a beautiful net-busting, amazing bit of skill that happened. And also, it's 2022 in the Premier League when you can't breathe on another player. So like trying to build a team that's going to be all blood and thunder and fire and guts, because that's what Leeds fans liked in the 1960s. Leeds fans also liked really skillful footballers in the 1960s, and you probably get away with that more. And it feels like it's better suited to Brendan Aaronson, who doesn't look like he would be able to knock his reflection out, although he's probably, again, considerably stronger than me. So there's maybe even that stuff, when that was what they were taking, when what they've taken, we're going to bring Marsh in, and he's going to build on from Bielsa, we're going to take all the good stuff from that, but they've thought that the good stuff is the aggression and the running and the stuff. It's like, we actually quite like Pablo Hernandez. That was part of the good stuff, and that wasn't just Bielsa, that was Pablo himself was able to bring something that we've just don't seem to have our eye on whatsoever. I don't know, maybe Gakpo would have been the one to do it. I don't care about him. Is he just a scum bastard in waiting?
And listen, we've gone dead long, so we'll bring it to an end there.
Longer than Jesse Marsh's job prospects, eh?
What's your summary thoughts on it, Michael? Does he stay? Does he
just
go?
Just sack him. I suspect it doesn't seem like they're going to. If we're going to believe what Marsh has said, that he's spoken to the board and they're backing him, but it's not happening.
It's going to be tough, isn't it? Because what does he do against Liverpool? Are we going to beat them?
We'll win. We'll do something stupid like win if he stays, won't we? It'll just confuse us all even some more.
I suppose the Brendan Rodgers thing is, well, there's two things have happened this weekend, isn't there? Villa have sacked Gerrard and they've gone and spanked Brentford. Was it 3-0?
Four
in the end. And then Leicester have stuck with Brendan Rodgers and they've gone and spanked Wolves 4.
But they had good bits. Brendan Rodgers has a good record at Leicester.
Yeah.
Leicester have seen...
Jesse Marsh has a good record in Austria.
Junior Firpo had a good record at Real Betis.
That's at the same club as I'm talking about.
Pat Bamford has a good record at Leeds.
Not recently. Not for a long time, he doesn't.
I expected... one of my disappointments of the day was Pat Bamford's haircut. Because he was on Instagram with having it chopped. But then it looked exactly the same. I was hoping for a mohawk. Maybe dyed purple or something.
Just thinking about haircuts, let's finish on a positive. And it was nice to see Luke Ayling back. Let's finish on that. Yeah.
Yeah, apart from his defending at set pieces.
Apart from that.
No, it was... I thought it was good, actually. It was. I'm surprised he's not been sent out for the post-match stuff because it's normally Luke Ayling's job, isn't
it? A big frown on them. Boys have got to take this. He does his best.
Be back Monday morning with Phil, doing the Phil Hay show. And then we will gather together for propaganda. Like I say, it's good that we've tweaked the format of propaganda so we don't have to indulge ourselves in too much Leeds if it's bad.
We'll just listen to the Fulham fans saying, we'll be dicked out of a raid.
We've got bits of over and over. Bits of Leicester as well in this game. One, haven't we? So that's going to be a hoot.
Nah, just delete all those if you drive, mate. Oh, there we go. We'll wrap it up there then. Thank you for watching and listening. We will see you in a bit.
The Match Ball.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, marketers. Want a matchmaker to set you up with your perfect audience? Well, look no further. Get intimate right away with host-read sponsorships with Acast. Use Acast's self-serve ad platform to search and partner up with a podcaster or two from our network of more than 100,000 shows. Have them sing your praises in their own words. And get their listeners ready to be wooed into loyal customers. It's the ultimate loving endorsement. Book host-read sponsorships with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.